And you got to keep fighting the feeling, the doom and gloom feeling. The doom and gloom feeling. And you got to keep fighting the feeling. The doom and gloom feeling.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to episode number 92 of It's Never Sunny in Seattle, a Seattle Mariners baseball podcast. My name is Dustin Ryan, and you can consider me like your flight attendant as we navigate this week in Mariners baseball. I'm joined by our pilot, the trusty Mikey Ahedo. How are you doing, Mikey? Excellent. We are joined also by our air traffic controller. It's Day. How are you, Day?
What the hell was that, Mikey?
I don't know. I feel like those are the sounds I'd be making if I was a pilot of a plane.
Dude, I just watched Flight for the first time last weekend, that Denzel Washington movie.
The goat.
What the fuck?
That's why I kind of did the intro this way, because I just got like planes on the brain. So, Mikey, I'm imagining you as Denzel in Flight.
We both have a lazy eye.
Yeah, so Mikey is going to go down a whole fifth of like brown liquor and then just do three lines of Coke before this pod.
Oh, man. can you redo the intro as Denzel Washington and Inside Man?
I am not ever going to attempt to impersonate Denzel, so.
No, not as him. No. Anyways, hello.
Okay, great. That's a proper intro. We've got Mikey here. We've got Day. We've got Dustin. And before we get started, I'd just like to remind everyone to join our Discord. We will post a Discord link with the show when it goes out. Discord, great place to meet like-minded fans, talk about Mariners baseball. And also, please consider joining the Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/neversunnyinseattle. Throw a couple dollars our way. It would be greatly appreciated. So many Seattleites have been looking forward to All-Star Week for over a year now, and those dreams were finally realized. The All-Star Game and all of the surrounding festivities were held in Seattle this week. Julio broke a home run derby record with 41 dingers, and after that, I'm pretty sure everyone just decided it was awesome, and they gave him the crown, and the derby ended there. At least that's how I remember it. The All-Star Game itself was held, and it was a wonderful showcase for Shohei Ohtani to Seattle speculators to really run wild. There was the MLB draft, there was the futures game, and the world was introduced to the glory that is the Seattle dog. How was your guys' All-Star Week? How'd you enjoy it? Was it everything you imagined? Day, I'll let you go ahead and share your thoughts first.
Mikey can go first. My dog's barking.
Okay, Mikey.
Nico. I imagine Day did not like it, aside from his wiffle ball home run derby extravaganza. I was actually in quarantine, I think, when we recorded last week. My brother got COVID, and I think is getting pretty close to coming off the COVID IL. But yeah, a lot of people were in town, and I missed... I missed the opportunity to meet a lot of people or say what's up to whoever, which I think is also a good excuse to not have to see some people that I didn't really care to that wanted might have wanted to see me. I don't know. Sometimes I don't feel so social. But yeah, man, I don't like having big events here. I think the energy can be cool, but I think just like with anything else, you know, the Mariners, MLB, all of it, like the excitement of it is just ruined by the ugly stuff. So, yeah, I think I found myself being like, wow, this is such a cool looking event. And then other times being like, this is so gross. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about neoliberalism and lately, as I'm wont to do. And yeah, you can just really see the like the way in which the Mariners and all MLB teams prioritize profit over a lot of people, especially houseless people. So it was a bummer for me. Sorry to be a fucking downer, but that is my truthful answer.
No, I appreciate your truthful answer. You know, we shouldn't feel pressure on this show to always be giving the positive, even if that is what we kind of attempt to do, especially, you know, when it comes to the rights of houseless people in Soto. So, no, I think I am in a very similar mode to you. I did my best to find ways to enjoy the event, but the more I looked around, the more it became unavoidable to think about, you know, the sweeps and everything else that was connected to holding the event here. Something about like actually seeing the out-of-towners be here just made me feel even more protective, and it kind of like put me in that headspace. So yeah, I agree. You know, I was watching the Home Run Derby on TV, and I thought it would be cool to see the Home Run Derby at T-Mobile Park. You know, it's like a familiar setting, and you know, I thought that would help me feel more connected to it. But was really distracting was the announcers. I forget who they were, but every like third home run, they would just pick a random Washington city to shout out. They'll be like, "Oh man, that's blasted to Bellevue. Oh man, that's a shot to Snohomish," or whatever. I'm like, dude, you're trying too hard. Get out of here. And he didn't even shout out Auburn. I'm like, if you're going to do that, you know, maybe throw some love to the hometown.
Unbelievable.
Dave, would you like to share your All-Star Week thoughts?
Or Nico?
Yeah.
I was like trying to practice my New York accent, and I pulled up a YouTube video while you're lamenting, Mikey, and I couldn't learn it fast enough. So your rant was not long enough, so don't worry. I was practicing because a Mets fan walked up to me with my dog in Pioneer Square and said I had a cute dog in the most New York Long Island accent. And that was probably like my only enjoyable moment all week. Was that very specific Mets fan.
Can I read something off?
Yep. In a New York accent?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, probably not. Okay. okay. So the first thing, there's a post from Stop the Sweeps that said cops and city workers violently displaced people in Soto to prepare the area for the MLB All-Star Game and tourists. Residents were told to move out of sight until the end of the games. I don't know if y'all have seen, I've seen them like even outside my work, but like the eco blocks that they put illegally.
Hostile architecture, baby.
Yeah, so those are all over the place. The other thing that I wanted to read was a report from Erica Barnett that came out yesterday. At the Mariners' request, Mayor's office pushed for encampment removal to make opening day great last year. We've been talking about this for a while now, but again, like the Mariners have made it very clear that they have a contradictory or antagonistic relationship with poor people. And also like against working class people, which we've seen with, you know, signing Starbucks as a partner. So, I don't know. It's all like, it's all pretty nasty business, literally. But, now we have confirmation that like, indeed the Mariners, are advocating for the sweeping of human beings. So, you know, we kind of talked about it, you know, weeks ago in terms of what areas were actually being sweeped. And now we know pretty, you know, specifically, downtown Seattle, Pioneer Square, Soda, like it's, they were working for like a year. Yeah, I think only a year, maybe two, to really sweep, the area, make it real clean. So also they made public transit free, which is like dumb to me. It's like giving rich people free Chipotle for life. That's the closest comp
for life.
Yeah, it's a thing, you know. They're like, Miley Cyrus needs free burritos, right?
So, as it's pretty well documented, at least in the Mariners and Korean newspapers at that time, what happened to my brother and I at the Mariners, and just kind of getting profiled, questioned if we had good tickets because of my brother's work at the time, and. We don't got to get into it. I mean, I think I actually was a guest of this podcast talking about it a couple years ago. And now I'm hosting it. I'm bringing all that up because I get a lot of like people, especially the haters who, you know, are pretty right leaning, always say shit like, oh, you're still a fan. You're such a hypocrite. Oh, now you like talk about the Mariners. I thought you hated them. I thought they hated you. And I bring that up because, you know, I obviously everything that Mikey's saying is true and it happened and it's fucked up. And they also like fucking do it before every opening game. You know, they did it before the playoffs last year. And we know that this is what happens in late stage capitalism. And it, as sports fans who have different political views than that, It's a weird, you know, when all the shit was going on with Kaepernick and football and people like at least on the left stopped watching for a while and some started watching again. I've kind of, you know, I've gone back and I'm not like I'm never going to be the football fan I was before. But like, yeah, I started watching a little bit since, you know, after a couple years of not watching. And. Yeah, I don't know. These are the moments where you're reminded that. This shit sucks. We complain about the teams not spending more money while they are making really shitty profit moves to essentially be in better positions to pay an immense amount for players like Shohei Ohtani, who I really want the Mariners to sign. And obviously, I'm not saying this as an excuse. I'm just saying this as this constant battle as a sports fan while trying to show up for community, fight for the right things, fight for, you know, those who are lack the material needs and resources to, like, even survive in this crazy world where the wealth gap continues to grow. And yeah, I don't know. The All-Star game was a reminder that, like, it's not really about the people who live here, you know? Even the fucking West Seattle ferry was free those 2 days. Like, the boat that takes people to Alki Beach, you know? And, you know, I've talked to a lot of the small businesses in Pioneer Square today and yesterday in the Chinatown International District as well. They prep for like 3-4 times the staff this weekend for the rush that was supposed to come and stimulate the economy. Most of them didn't get anything. And they actually, a lot of them lost money this weekend. And the city just didn't do a good job integrating the folks into the neighborhoods, into the communities to actually like pump up these small businesses. You know, so everything from like, the most cash poor folks on the street who are swept and even pushed all the way to like areas in like Thurston County. There are folks in like Olympia, you know, from Soto and Pioneer Square to like even the small businesses who are like, okay, cool, like a good weekend for us. Like we've been struggling. This is going to help. Oh, okay. Never mind. It's, I don't know. I guess Pike Place was like a cool photo op for that red carpet or pink carpet or whatever that happened. But it's just like a lot of missed opportunities and an unfortunate deprioritization of the local people here. And at the same time, like, are we surprised? It's a for-profit, multi-billion dollar industry in late stage capitalism, not to be like that old man that's like, it's, that's how it is, but it's that constant wrestle as a sports consumer that like, this shit is like every fucking team, and it's terrible.
The I'll just say it real quick, but like the argument that if you support, you know, MLB, NFL, NBA, like, again, it's really fucking trite, but like you can't consume, you cannot consume any sports, you know, if you want to be like ethical about it. Like, there's no way to watch anything. Like all of these players, like that's what capitalism is. Like that's literally, you know,
definitely not pickleball.
LOL. Is that a thing? Are there?
What do you mean? It's the rich people's fucking new pastime.
Wait, it's incredible that you bring that up, because there is like the pro pickleball open, like the huge pro tournament is happening in Seattle next week.
Fucking nauseating. Yeah, every celebrity owns a pickleball team now. It's like the new like pyramid scheme for rich people. They like, they lost all their money in Bitcoin, so now it's pickleball. I'm not even joking.
No, I believe you.
We can move on to some other topics here pretty soon, but I want to thank you, Dave, for bringing up that topic about local businesses, because that is so much like the false bill of goods that these events are sold to the community on, is that, oh, this is going to be like such a big boom to the local economy. And so I think it's important for us to recognize like when that fails, and it seems like it did. It's like it's a boom for the quote unquote local economy. But yeah, I think the real beneficiaries of that are the big, you know, the big companies. It's the big like corporate, you know, like the big corporate sponsors. You know, it's T-Mobile probably. It's Alaska Airlines. It's Starbucks, who we all talk about. But
there was one org, one small org that benefited a proud, and it's SPD. They had a blast this weekend. I saw them playing fucking cornhole. They were playing Pac-Man. They even like, I don't know, they brought gloves to work. They're like playing catch, making $90 an hour, making that overtime money. Blast.
Well, at least they were out of the streets, I guess.
Oh, God. Oh, all right. Press the button. Doom and gloom.
Mikey is going to be recording this episode, so it's his responsibility to splice that in. We'll see if that comes to fruition. But
just in case people didn't catch my sarcasm, like I've heard so many like NIMBY type neighbors be like, look at all the cops here, like they're gonna go away on Wednesday, you know, like what's the point? And I mean, it's true, you know, I have never seen that many police officers in Occidental Park area and getting paid so much overtime to create this like narrative that like this is what a healthy city looks like. And from that, you know, none of the people who actually live here, working class, it just created this weird dystopic version of the city that I guess some people think they want here. It felt so disingenuous, and it's just unfortunate. Oh, but I real quick, all-star highlight, Tongi, American Idol winner, Hawaii kid, he sang the national anthem.
He crushed it.
Lyrics aside, song aside, he crushed it, just talent wise that's all I'll say. Okay,
well, we'll move on with the show. One piece of important news that came out right around the time of recording: Max Wiener has left the M's organization to be a pitching coach for Texas A&M. I think we're going to have to make an important decision about what kind of podcast we're going to be. Are we the kind of podcast that's going to laugh at the name Max Wiener?
Did you literally just bring him up because his name is Wiener?
No, I brought it up because one, it's in our rundown, you know, this is important information to hit on, but since it came up, I do feel like if I was him, I would at least go by like the full name. You know what I mean? Like Max, like go by like Maximilian or like, you know, whatever. Because like Max really emphasizes the last name, I feel like Max Wiener. Come on.
Yeah, no, it's relevant information. I'm just giving you shit about the Wiener joke. But yeah, no, it's Mikey, this must be a huge deal, right? It's our pitching coach.
So I don't have an encyclopedic, you know, knowledge of all the personnel in the org. I honestly think this is like the biggest deal outside of, I mean, to me, like Jerry DePoto. I feel like you can replace Hollander. You can replace a lot of guys. Like he's really like a rising star. He's like my age and is the pitching coordinator for the Mariners, you know, for the organization. And you know, I was at first was like, why would you leave such like a cool role where you have a lot of sway? Probably, you know, like he's probably gonna ascend to the highest sort of role that he can. And then I was talking to Robert Orr, who is a writer at Baseball Prospectus. He mentioned Wes Johnson left the Twins where he was making like $350,000. And went to the University of Arkansas, more than doubled that, and was making $750,000. And that was back in 2018. So that's 5 years ago. I wouldn't be surprised if Max Wiener is going to make a mil. So I think for him, it's like he's the pitching coach at A&M. He had a quote about kind of the culture of professional baseball and it being kind of a like every man for himself kind of thing. And he did mention that like the Mariner system was not like that. And I think that's because of the culture that they've really tried to cultivate. But I think there are multiple decisions that, you know, have led him to this. And I think a lot of it is money. But it's a really, really big deal. Like this guy, I think you can really credit for helping a lot of the guys like Miller and Wu, and I'm not sure how long he's been with the organization, but it's as big of a deal as you might imagine it is. It's a bigger deal than you probably imagined it is for the average listener.
Yeah, I do agree with all that. You know, it sounds like Max was credited with a lot of the success of our young pitching, especially Logan Gilbert and Kirby, and yeah, maybe even a bigger extent, people like Wu and Miller. But what I'm also thinking is if so much of your pitching development or so much of your like organization rides on one person, then that's kind of an organization built on sand to begin with. So I'm hoping that's not the case. I totally believe that he may have been like innovative and pivotal to this organization like up to this point, but my fingers are crossed that he was able to pass on a lot of that information to the people around him, you know, maybe mentor some of the other people that are around in the organization. And you know, I think my other thought too is at least he's going to amateur ball, if that makes sense. I would be a little bit more concerned if he was going to another, you know, pro team, like maybe if he was signed on as the head pitching coach for another pro team, I'd be a little bit more concerned about that brain drain, you know, and maybe if he had some novel ideas, I don't want those going elsewhere. So, you know, in my head, it could be a little worse, and hopefully we have people around that can kind of fill that vacuum now. But yeah, it seems like it still hurts to see him go.
Man, I mean, the previous pitching coach, sorry, for A&M, went to be the pitching coach for LSU.
I mean, there's huge, like, if you think about it, the boosters are rich. They're richer than MLB owners.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes. So I think there's a lot of money in college ball, especially now with the rules changing with like player compensation or student compensation.
I mean, the guy, Wiener, our old guy now, he, I mean, he's like a prodigy guy. I mean, he like developed like this pitching farm program called the Arm Farm at 19 years old. Like he's like one of those like basketball has a lot of these like young up and coming coaches who are like geniuses in the film room and stuff. I think he's like one of those guys. Can I put my conspiracy theory hat, my tinfoil hat on for a sec?
Please.
Please do.
We love it.
He's a big part of the reason why Bryce got to the front. You know, he's like a rotation guy now. Brian, I think we're trading some guys.
Yeah, let's go.
I think we're going to make a big trade, guys. I think one of those two guys are gone.
You think he would leave because of that?
I'm not saying he's like mad and crying out the door and being like, Bryce, it's not me, man. Like, I'm not saying it's a whole WWE scene, bloodline. But, you know, this happens sometimes. Like, the coach who's responsible for developing a lot of this young talent, I'm not saying it was all Wiener, but, you know, the Mariners org gives him a lot of credit for this. And,
you're
not
saying it was all Wiener?
I'm not saying it was all Wiener. It's some Wiener. And think about it, you know, it's like it's right at that time. We're shopping players around. There's been rumors that we're willing to give up some arms for some bats. Really, the ones who make sense are the ones that Wiener has developed. He just left for another job. Am I crazy?
All right. I can't.
Come on, Dustin. Dustin, come on.
It wasn't even a thing to me before. But now that I look at it, I'm just like maximum Wiener and like,
right? Oh, thank you made me feel so immature for bringing it up, but I'm like, dude, it's the elephant in the room. Were we just gonna sit here and say Max Wiener like 10
listen
times?
English is my second language. English is my second language. I get it. Max Wiener. All right.
I hope
it's true. It's pretty fucking like he must have had an amazing or a terrible childhood. I don't know.
There's no way that he listens to our podcast, but we are mutuals on Twitter. And so, Max, if you're listening, it's
that's
these
pretty
guys.
Dope.
Dude, we're saying nice things about him, and I'm sure these jokes are nothing he hasn't heard before. So, yes, I am sorry if you're listening. And really,
just
I'm sorry
him
to
full
all
responsibility
listeners.
For developing two of the hottest young pitchers in the whole league.
For sure.
Much we respect you, Max. Good luck in Texas.
We do love Max Wiener.
We put his name in the show title. He's listening, I promise you.
Ooh,
the gang goes Max Wiener.
Max Wiener mode.
All right.
Okay. He's 28. Holy shit.
I just said he's my age. Yeah. Oh my he's God. On the Forbes 30 under 30 in sports list. Anyways.
The dude's coaching Seattle
let's get
years.
To the mailbag.
Okay.
Okay. Mailbag time. So Clay Winstead asks, what would you change about the All-Star game going forward? Scheduling, events, treatment of the unhoused, etc. So, now that we've had the event here in Seattle and we've seen it with our own eyes, what would you guys change to improve the entire All-Star game festivities? Day, do you want to go first?
Okay, I'll try to keep mine a little lighthearted. Our listeners, the listeners of this pod are just, they're the best. They just like slipped in treatment of unhoused in that huge list. Shout out Clay. I would change. I'm put on the spot. Can I just be honest? I didn't watch a lot of it. I watched like the last inning of the game, and I watched a lot of the Derby. Can I ask for like a local priced ticket option for locals?
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Like in Hawaii, it's called a Kama'aina discount. That means like you're from and born and you live in Hawaii, and you get like a different price and everything, like the touristy shit, sometimes food. Like we have our own price there. And it's like a custom, like it's it's basically everybody knows. You go to a place, you ask, oh, do you guys have a comma ina rate? It's very normal. We need something like that for the fucking All-Star game here, man. It's unaffordable. I want it to go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was also priced out. So, yeah, I think that would go a long way to making us feel a little bit better about what the game does, like, to the people that actually live here. Mikey, do you have any thoughts? Anything you would change?
First thing I'm doing, getting rid of the fucking All-Star Celebrity Softball game. I don't give up.
What if they're like K-pop members?
At least that would be funny. But like you said last week, or literally like, I don't know, 4 days ago, it's like yeah, D-list celebrities D-list and JoJo Siwa. Did not help.
JoJo was one of the most famous people.
I know. And like, I don't care to see her play. The HBCU Swingman Classic, I think, is a great addition and something like between that and the Futures game, I think they need to promote those more because they put them in awful slots. The Futures game is at 4 p.m. our time. I don't remember what it was, but I was like, this is an awful time to watch something. And I think overall, just, you know, fans want to see fireworks, or at least silly stuff. Like, I think people really like the idea of like the bunting kind of games, or like, I don't know, some crazy Ichiro shit where he's like, you know, that commercial where he's like hitting a ball up in the air and then sprinting, grabbing his glove and catching it in right field. Like, some crazy shit. But number one, no celebrity All-Star game or whatever you call it, softball game, and market the other stuff better. I think they've done a better job at making the Home Run Derby more exciting. Although Julio, for the record, is the winner of the past 2 years. Like, he's been punished by tiring himself out, essentially, and being too good. Or maybe, you know, he should just be smarter. Not
it's
just
a it's bad art of war, man. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so much that they could change.
They need to have, like, some kind of swing off, too. You know? In the actual game. Can I give a hot take real quick, Dustin? I'm sorry. We need to make the game determine the home field in the World Series again.
Does it not?
Dude, that's when you got Pete Rose running straight head down into home.
I thought it did. I think it still does.
No, they got rid of that a few years ago. It doesn't actually count for anything anymore.
No, it's literally an exhibition.
What the fuck?
Now.
How do they? It's just every other year or what?
Yeah, there's no way the AL just had automatic home field for like the last 10 years. There's no way.
Yeah, I don't know how they determine it now, to be honest with you. I think it's kind of like a seeding thing. Maybe it has to do with like, you know, wins in the regular season. I think that's what it's based on, but there's literally no way to know. So who knows?
But I think they got rid of it after the article I'm seeing is like sometime in 2016. Since 2017 season, they don't do that anymore. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have been thinking about this question, and yeah, I feel like the biggest weak link, besides maybe the celebrity softball game, is the All-Star game itself. You know, I feel like the week kind of builds to this crescendo that's the Home Run Derby, and then the All-Star game is always kind of like a disappointment. It goes for the strategy of pleasing everyone in the sense that, like, oh, every team has a player in the All-Star game and everybody, you know, gets to take like at least one at bat or, you know, one inning pitch or something like that. And I feel like what ends up happening is nobody is pleased because, like, I personally am not excited to see Julio take one at bat and then like walk or whatever. And it's like, I'm going to watch a 3-hour game just to see, you know, my one player take one at bat. So I think the All-Star game needs to just not be a straight up baseball game. And there are some options. So one, I would love the All-Star game to turn into all of the All-Stars playing baseball adjacent sports instead. So have like 1 year we're going to do All-Star game is like cricket, Or like one year the All-Star game is like, I don't know, maybe we can have like the Savannah Bananas run the All-Star game and they can play banana ball. You know, if since it's an exhibition anyway, I don't want to see this crappy little like everybody gets one at bat game. Does that make sense?
Dustin's trying to kill the players. Jordan Romano's already out here hurting his back and you're trying to have him roll his ankle playing cricket.
Lewis. Dude, it would be so sick though. Like since these guys are such freak athletes, tell me you wouldn't want to see Shohei Ohtani up there with like a cricket bat and then like bowling. I bet Shohei could be so good at bowling.
You're unhinged, dude. End the fucking pop. No. What's wrong with you? Crooked
I
bat.
I want to see the bad athletes play other sports.
So that's basically just like the celebrity softball game. Bad athletes playing sports they're bad at.
Damn it.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of games are pretty much like half like NBA players.
It's so fucking stupid. Anyways, yeah.
All right, well, I think we have officially solved the All-Star game. So MLB, just give us a call, put us in charge, and nobody will ever want to watch it again once I'm done with it.
Wouldn't you guys agree that the Home Run Derby the best non-game All-Star event in all of sports, though?
Like
it's better than the three-point contest.
The dunk
it's better
contest.
Than the skills challenge in the NFL. Like, the derby is pretty goated, though.
I think the dunk contest is the only rival.
Oh, the dunk contest, right. That's pretty close. I still take the derby, man.
Yeah.
The derby is fun.
It depends. I mean, it really just depends on dunk if they contest. Have exciting people in the dunk contest, which they always do now, so
that's true.
It's up there though.
It's one of the two. You're right. All right.
Okay, next question. JP 20 home run season truther, love the name. They ask, my question is, I hear people saying things like, I hope the derby helps Julio get his power back. How valid is that statement? He's been hitting for a nice high average for the past few weeks. Would the home run derby, quote unquote, unlock his ability to lift the ball out again? Mikey, do you believe that participating in the home run derby will help Julio unlock his power for the rest of the season?
If I were to like grade the statement, I hope the derby helps Julio get his power back in terms of like how much it makes sense, I think like a 2.5, 2, probably a 2. Julio does a lot of batting practice, and it's basically batting practice. I think if anything, like I think I mentioned last week or two eps ago, I think participating in it and not like getting the break, the like programmed break that other players are getting, is more likely to wear him down the stretch. And I think he actually kind of faded last year. So what the fuck just popped up in our talks? There's a picture of Guy Fieri holding a 4 or 5 foot hot dog?
No. He's holding a maximum wiener. You have to see it. You have to see it together.
I mean, obviously it's going in the podcast banter channel. Anyways, yeah, I think it doesn't really make sense. I think the nature, like, I think an interesting little factoid, I guess, is that like, I think this is true of a lot of different metrics, but if you look at like first half WOBA and second half WOBA, the first half is actually more predictive of next year, next season WOBA than the second half. And I don't know why that is. I think people tend to think like, oh, well, like obviously he made this like adjustment in the second half and like, so the second half is more predictive, and the evidence just isn't there for it, even though like a lot of what I write about is that it's like, oh, this guy's making this change, this is why I'm excited about him, or vice versa, versa, usually excited. So I think even with players that participate in the Derby, whether they start trending up or down from that point has less to do with their participation in the Home Run Derby and more to do with they were struggling early in the season and, you know, hit it hard from there, literally, or vice versa. Like they were doing pretty well and then like maybe tired themselves out or lost their swing or something happened. You know, there's a lot of noise in baseball statistically, but that is a long form answer of that.
Can I throw out my theory as to why first half OPS is more predictive of next season OPS than second half?
I think I know what it is. And does it have to do with velo?
No. And maybe people have already thrown this out before.
All right, let's hear it then. Yeah.
Well, I would just think it's because the first half is technically a bigger sample. It's not halves. The first half is like 60% of the season and the second half is like 40%. So, you know, I would just say a bigger sample is probably more predictive.
That was like the most dad joke theory I've ever heard, dude.
What? You're not buying it? I'm being dead serious.
No. It's logical.
I honestly didn't even really think about that.
But it was a dad joke stat.
How many games have they played? Are we looking it up? Is that why there's a pause?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely more than half of 162.
I'm going to guess like 94. Well, everyone looks it up. I don't want to edit this.
Just leave it all in. Leave it all in. Okay. 45 plus 44, 89.
Oh my God. Okay. I will look up. I always say I'm going to look this up and I'll bring it up later and I always forget. So I'll probably do that. But I am going to try and look up the R squared of like the predictiveness of first and second half stats. I can probably find that on Fangraphs really quickly.
Okay, well, while you're looking at that, I'll just address this question real fast. I understand where the spirit of like the idea that this will help Julio unlock his power, like I understand where that idea comes from, but I'm going to say absolute 0% chance that this is true. There's like such different things, the Home Run Derby to like actually playing in a game. It's just, it's so different. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a pooper, but no, that's not it. Unless Framy Pena is pitching to Julio every game, I don't think so. But maybe Day is more optimistic.
I'm definitely in the more old school camp. I think it usually hurts more than it helps. But just with, I don't know, habits and stuff. But I don't know. I mean, Pete Alonso won it and then was on pace to hit 60 home runs after that. Was that because of the Derby? I don't know. I don't know if it helped. I'm a big believer in the mental. I think it was good that he had that ovation. He felt what it felt like, again, to be a star and to be cheered and not booed because our fans have been so mean to him. And I don't know, maybe in that sense it helped. I'm very glad the game didn't end with the J-Rod strikeout, though, the All-Star game. I was nervous about that. But I don't know. I don't think it moves the needle.
Yeah, I will concede that there probably is some level of psychological boost if you do well. That being said, does it work in the opposite direction? And is Pete Alonso basically going to drop out of the league after how depressed he was after the Home Run Derby? He looks so sad, man. If you like read his body language, it was like shoulder slumped. You could tell he was pissed because that guy takes the Home Run Derby so seriously.
Last year is actually a good example, and I actually don't know what Juan Soto's second half numbers were, but Juan Soto was, correct me if I'm wrong, was having a terrible first half last year and he won the Derby. Anyone remember if that helped him?
there's literally no way to know. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I thought this article would tell me, but it's just
unfortunately, Mikey is the fastest at looking stuff up on the fly while we're recording, and he is currently busy. So
it's because he's still refusing to use AI.
Honestly, now I'm just looking up. There's a tweet about has something to do with like Pete Alonso. Like the only thing going on in his head is the opening riff of Immigrant Song.
That seems right.
Why do I hate that man so much?
We all know why, Day.
Moving on.
Anyways, yeah, I actually, I don't know if I can find it. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, that's fine. We can drop it.
Yeah. Anyways.
Okay, cool.
I do know it's true, though.
Okay, take our word for it. We can't find our evidence, but I'm assuming if you're listening to the show, you kind of trust Mikey at least as far as you can throw him. So, yeah, just believe us. Okay, the MLB draft also took place this weekend. It was a packed weekend. Recently, MLB moved the draft to be during All-Star Weekend. And the Mariners had many picks in this draft, especially towards the first and second rounds. So I think we're hoping to have a more comprehensive draft episode later in this week, hopefully with a guest. So we'll go into the results of the draft in a little bit more detail later, but we wanted to at least acknowledge it, maybe bring up some guys that we thought were interesting, and then maybe talk a little bit big picture about the Mariners' strategy in this draft relative to other drafts. So yeah, I guess I'll go ahead and start. With their first pick, the Mariners took Colt Emerson. He's very young, out of high school, not even 18 yet. This man is 17. It looks like he has great swing decisions. He's at shortstop right now. It seems like there's some question of whether he'll stay at shortstop as he kind of advances through the ranks. But I think the Mariners are optimistic that he will stay at shortstop. Yeah, a lot of people are very excited about this pick. Mikey put in our rundown that he seems like a dweeb. I can't speak to that because I don't really know anything about him. Mikey, in what way is he dweeby?
There's a video I saw of Joe Doyle is like, I don't know, contributing for like, seems like at least two super random websites. And on, I think his or his websites, or the website he contributes for, YouTube, I just pulled up the video because I was like, oh, cool. Cole Emerson's talking. And it was Joe Doyle. And Cole Emerson is just talking about how, like, basically, like, boring but solid he is. And he just seems like a dork. I don't even necessarily mean it, like, you know, as a pejorative. I guess I do to some extent. So I guess I probably wouldn't hang out with Cole Emerson. And by that, like, I wouldn't. but that doesn't mean that he can't be a very good player because, like Dustin was saying, like, the defense is good. Like, even if he doesn't stick at short, seems like third base is super reasonable, pretty sure-handed with the glove, elite swing decisions, good contact. Pretty good, like, gap power. So I kind of think of this similar to, like, Cole Young. But to me, and I'm not a draft guy, it seems like there's more upside here. So, yeah, I think that's a good pick. Day, do you want to go ahead with yours?
I just want to first talk about how your what's her name? And Mean Girls.
Rachel McAdams.
Regina George.
Yes, you're Rachel McAdams. Oh. Regina George. You're so mean to Colt, man. What is he like? Magic the Gathering? Or you're not talking about nerd. You're talking about dork.
Yeah. Dweeb. really.
That's kind of what I want in my first round pick, is somebody that has no thoughts beyond baseball. You know what I mean? Just like no character, no, I want it to be your life.
Someone taking, who just has the Immigrant Song, the opening riff, just running in their head over and over again.
Yeah, we basically drafted Pete Alonso, so look forward to that day.
Elite swing decisions seems like a dweeb.
Yeah. I think that's helpful. Our listeners will let us know.
I see what you're saying. I see. I just went on his Instagram.
Yeah, okay. It's really not. Yeah, like you don't have to hear him talk.
When you see, I get it. I get it. You guys just got to go. Go to his Instagram right now. Just like I'm doing for my minor league pick. Ty Pete. Wait, we're picking, right?
Yeah. Now you're talking.
Okay. I just want to make sure because Ty is, he's 18 years old. He is supposedly, according to Mikey, 10 minutes before the podcast, said he's a monster athlete. He also pitches. I mean, when I first read the report on him, like, it's not like I was watching his high school games before Mariners drafted him. But when they say, like, he throws 95, I just assume that, you know, he's like Matt Chapman. Like, he can throw in the mid-90s getting drafted out of high school, but it's not like that's his position. But, like, the dude really pitches. And he pitched throughout high school. I'm pretty sure they're not going to develop him into a pitcher because I think his bat is too elite. Then again, who knows? I mean, we're in the era of Shohei, so maybe. But I don't know. Mikey, you wrote that he has a lot of swing and miss potential. Have you seen that in the reports?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who wrote about that. I think Alex Jensen, someone at Prospects Live that's local, I think a Mariners fan, so has done some reporting and tweeting on Mariners draft picks. He seems like he's actually a really big fan of most of the picks. I think this is one that he was kind of iffy on because of said swing and miss, but again, like, insane bat speed, great athleticism that, like, you know, plays in the field, and really good energy. Like, Scott Hunter said he looks like a wide receiver, and his energy and, like, smile remind him of Julio. So
what does that mean exactly? Like, he doesn't have the skills of Julio, but he has the energy, and what did you say, smile?
I mean, he's just, like, really infectious and, like, gregarious and, like, lights up a room when he walks in. I think that kind of thing.
So the opposite of Pete Alonso.
Exactly, yeah. But basically the other side of this dweeb spectrum of Cole Emerson and Pete Alonso.
Exactly.
Okay. Again, second time I'm saying this on the show, English is my... What do we exactly mean when we say dweeb?
Dork.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't just answer it with another word that needs to be defined.
No, that's a great question. It's like nerd adjacent, kind of like you said, but at least the way I imagine a dweeb, it's like, you know.
Okay, like when Mikey said dweeb and dork, I was like, damn, this dude's like bullying like the kids on Stranger Things. And then I went on Colt's Instagram and he looks like he like loves 4th of July. You know, and so it's like, okay, like I'm clearly not understanding what you're saying. Because at first I thought you were being a cyber bully. And then I was like, ah, that's what I meant. Oh, like, no, I get it.
I am. Noun, derogatory, informal, a boring, studious, or socially inept person. It's like, yeah, it's like nerd. You know, they used to have a, oh, no, that's dunce. Hold on.
Who's your guy, Dustin?
I already gave it. my day. And I feel like I'm really like letting my responsibilities as a host go by the wayside to just let this podcast evolve into us looking up synonyms for like
we just haven't been together in a while. And you know, we did this on purpose because I'm trying to get you guys to do these pods in person, live on video.
Yes, that's something.
Put it out into the world. We just put it out into the world.
That's something our listeners can hopefully look forward to. A live podcast is in the works. Video
not after
pod.
This shit.
That's true. I'm gonna have to be on the other side of the room as day.
I mean, we just spent the first half trashing everything fun, and then we are now cyberbullying Colt Emerson.
It's okay. He won't hear this either. Mikey, I believe you have a pick you would like to talk about.
Yeah. I'm not gonna cop out this time. I'm just gonna pick one. I do want to mention the other name so bad, but I feel like that's kind of copping out. I think I'm hoping Jeff Ponce is who we bring on next week. I can't really think of, like, I honestly can't think of anyone better. Jeff has been on the show twice. So I'm sure he'll give us some pretty high level breakdowns of these guys. I'm going to go with Teddy McGraw. Super insane skill set, like picked in the fourth round, has already had TJ twice. I think one in high school and one. I'm honestly trying to remember, like, I don't even know if he's a prep guy. I think he was drafted out of fucking college, but he was indeed. I think one in high school and one in college. It's like, it sounds like his velo is pretty sporadic. He's like mid-90s fastball with sink because he has a really low slot. Sinker with a lot of sweep, a lot of depth. And what I've read is like the velo and command doesn't really hold. It drops after a few innings, which is, you know, reminds me of Bryce Miller. So I kind of see two paths. I mean, you know, the error bars are insanely wide. Like the guy's already had TJ twice. If things go well, they get him into, you know, into the system. They clean up some of his mechanics. Honestly, like send him to Driveline. And he starts, you know, sitting at whatever velo more consistently. And he's really good. I think the kind of outcome below that is like he becomes a pretty damn good reliever. And, you know, the worst case scenario is like, dude just can't stay healthy. So this is a pretty exciting one, I think. Again, like, I think a fourth rounder, but like first round kind of stuff. So a little, I think we meant to bring this up earlier, like really this draft is a departure from previous ones to an extent. Jerry DePoto is very well known for just going college, 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 like floor, floor, floor. You know, in 2021, went with Harry Ford, which is a pretty big deal. And then Edwin Arroyo, Michael Morales, like a bunch of prep guys. And then, you know, 2022 last year, like Cole Young, prep guy. Tyler Locklear, you know, college. Walter Ford, prep guy. Izzy, prep guy. So we're starting to see, like, I don't know if it's quite a market inefficiency, where, you know, teams are going with the college, guys more often. I mean, it's been a thing really since Moneyball, but, I think it has more to do with like that. Yeah, that might be it. I think it has more to do with, where their system is at. I think they feel good enough that, they can start to take the more high upside guys. And like, really, they've shown an ability to develop. So the theme here is a lot of bats, which is pretty new early. And a lot of them being prep. And then I think from rounds 5 to 20, they picked, I forget, like 11 pitchers or something like that. So they went, you know, high risk, high reward, prep bats early, and then pitching later. So I don't know, pretty interesting draft. I was surprised to see them go with so many prep hitters early, but I'm probably more excited about this draft than I've been of any.
Yeah, I feel similarly, and I think it definitely helps that we had so many high picks. You know, shout out to Julio for winning the Rookie of the Year and getting us that pick, right?
Oh, who was his pick? Was it Pete or Farmelo?
I guess I don't know the exact order. It gets kind of complicated, like what order those comp picks come in. But this was definitely a pretty deep draft, it sounds like. So yes, I'm very excited.
Who doesn't love big upside picks, baby? We swung for the fences with these guys. And I think as fans, that's pretty exciting.
I believe Ty Pete was the competitive balance round A pick, which to me...
He's a vlogger, means, by the way.
So I don't know. Yeah, I think this is bad, like, behavioral economics, but if you're getting a pick that Julio earned you, I feel better about going with one of the toolsiest players in the draft to that point, right?
Sure. Makes sense to me. What even is behavioral economics, man?
Is Ty Pete, Ty Pete was the Julio pick?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Same smile?
It's destiny.
It's destiny.
Okay, well, if you guys don't have any other draft thoughts for now, or rather, I know Mikey has other draft thoughts, but we're going to try to bottle that up and save that for a future episode where we'll go into this in more depth. But I think it's about time for us to wrap up, heading into the second half real quick. How are you guys' feelings on the team?
Oh, God. I kind of forgot about that, honestly.
Right? It's like, oh, right. They're going to have to like keep playing after this.
I'm very excited for them to have rested up. And I really, really hope they do something soon. I will say before we go, and actually after we hear from you and Day, I want to plug some stuff at the end. But the Cardinals did say, John Mozniak, whatever his name is, said, like, we are going to trade people. And I think it was a little bit of clickbait because he was like, we're going to trade people who won't be around or like some lesser known names. But he did say they're going to trade people.
Okay, I'm very excited for the second half of the season. Despite all of the reasons that I maybe shouldn't be, I'm still like pretty optimistic about our playoff odds. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this trade deadline shakes out. I'm really mainly just like ready for the uncertainty to be solved. It's kind of like stressing me out living in this place of like, oh my God, what's going to happen? So yeah, excited for the trade deadline. Hopefully not going to be disappointed. And yeah, let's go into the second half. Day, how do you feel?
I feel pretty mid, as the young kids would say. And I think we're about to make some mid-ass trades. Tommy Edmond for Bryce Miller. You guys ready?
I do kind of feel like that's something that will happen. So shout out to Frank. Day and I play softball with him. He texted me. He's a sicko. After our game, we were just like kind of shooting the shit. And I was like, oh, it kind of makes sense to get like Lucas Giolito because I think he's on an expiring deal. Mm-hmm. And then he texted me, I think today or yesterday, and was like, yeah, I thought about it. Nick Magical makes some sense too. And I was like, you're sick in the head, dude.
Oh, man. I hope we at least get like an Andrew Vaughn. I mean, let's keep with the high ceiling guys.
No, not Vaughn. Not another guy who can't field. Please. Please.
Well, we would love Nolan Gorman. He can't field.
Fuck it. Nolan Arenado, just take the contract.
Ty France, second base. It's the only way, baby. Goldie at first, Ty at second. Okay, I'll see you guys in the postseason.
Yeah, our motto going into the second half is going to be fuck it. Let's go. All right.
Fuck it. Phillies 2022, baby.
Yes, that's exactly it. Okay, so this has been It's Never Sunny in Seattle. I'm Dustin.
We need some plugs. We need some quick plugs. Sorry, Dust.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Dust. How dare you?
Well, I was going to put the plugs after, but...
Sorry, yeah. You're just doing the rap song like it was out of the box. So long, farewell.
No,
oh, shit, stop the song.
You guys are totally right. We should actually put Mikey's plugs before that. So, yeah, take it away.
My bad.
You are wrong, and we are right. Okay, let's see. I already plugged the Malaya exhibits, and I'll just put those in the show notes again. The 23rd, I believe, yes, Sunday, PSONA, the People Sona. I don't think the dates are out yet, but please come out and support and, you know, really show out, you know, for the Filipino masses in denouncing really all the bullshit that Bongbong Marcos is going to be, you know, putting out there the next day at his Sona. The other thing is that the Pacific Northwest People Over Profit, PNW POP, just dropped some information about the People Summit that is happening later this month, July 29th and 30th. Mark your calendar, Saturday, Sunday. And really, it's an opportunity to connect with individuals, but also organizations. You know, everyone, or at least all the organizations will be there, are people who are opposing the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, APEC, which is coming to Seattle in July, August, and will be in SF in November. So if you are trying to, like, you know, find a political home, get politicized, or radicalized, it's going to be a really good opportunity to... Yeah, meet some folks. You will see me there. I'm going to try and drag these guys out there. It'll be cool. So, I'll post stuff in the Discord. I'll post it online. I'll post it in the show notes. But yeah, hoping to keep plugging stuff at the top or bottom of our shows.
Excellent. Thank you for those plugs, Mikey. And yeah, I definitely would like to continue adding these plugs to the show because I think it's good to boost those events. So thank you. All right.
Breaking news. GeoLilo's start is getting skipped, guys.
Who's skipped this? To T-Mobile Park.
GeoLilo, Frank's boy.
Oh, shit.
It's time.
That's a sign.
It's time, baby.
I'm going to be sick.
Okay.
Sorry. That's all the breaking news I had. All right, Pasan, take us away.
Thank you. Okay, I have been Dustin. You can find me at Twitter at Dustin J. Ryan. You can find Day on Twitter at Dayshik Jr. And of course, you can find Mikey on Twitter at _KuyaMikey. Find our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And remember to check out our Discord and Patreon, patreon.com/NeverSunnyInSeattle. Thank you for listening and go Mariners.
Don't be a dweeb.